I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast, episode 203, and with me this week is Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
It's debatable who the fool is if you intend to blow up this corner of the universe.
Who, as per usual, got some very strange audio problems. Mary Lang.
I'm not letting a manic, depressive, homicidal maniac shut me up.
Robert Haynes.
Shut up.
Sometimes you sound just like Mother. So why don't you stop worrying, buzz off, and enjoy your evening out?
And it's about time, too. No, it's not Reese Parton. That would be silly. It's Matthew Kressel.
Oh, what absolute rubbish.
No, Ruby.
Rubbish.
And I'm Adam, and welcome to the show. Right then, Zoe. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
You're back.
Who's Matthew?
Yes, I'm back.
So it's good, actually, because
I've
had an extra edge to you won't get this one because of your ultra competitivity and Ben's ultra cheating methods. Should result in some sort of fight, so I'm looking forward to
the quiz is going to happen. Since I only watched this piece of
Here comes the excuse.
Yes. always.
That's rather
he's going to win because I'm sure he's seen it 28 times.
No, we don't know.
Half times, actually, and the halftime only was about as far as I could get into it this time round before I just said I can't watch this anymore.
Ben won last week quite comfortably, didn't he? Don't know how he managed that, but he did. Anyway, right. So this week we're looking at the Twin Dilemma, and therefore we shall begin. Right, it begins with some twins.
Really?
Who at the time I thought a little bit on the wooden side.
But actually, they're not as bad as I remember.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I felt. The only thing, obviously, like they said in the commentary, it's a bit of a shame that they called two boys who can't pronounce their R's properly Romulus and Remus.
They should have called them Castor and Pollux.
There's no need to swear.
Would have made more sense.
And, of course, their dad, who only appears in one episode, or actually about 5 seconds of one episode, which isn't really
Dennis
not in it.
Dennis Dinnery.
I wonder if he got paid for the whole series.
In Genesis of the Daleks.
He was. And then, of course, we have... they're doing equations, and they're sort of, obviously, sort of geniuses, and a little bit arrogant, and I thought they conveyed that quite well. Beg your pardon?
Whatever they're printing out is blocks.
Yes,
they're playing Space Invaders.
Yeah, as they mentioned on the commentary.
And then we cut to the TARDIS where the Doctor's just regenerated, and I have to say that Colin Baker looks much better in Peter Davison's costume than Peter Davison did. So maybe he should have just sort of
even with the slime on him.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I have to say Colin Baker is very handsome in this.
Is he, Mary?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In the commentary, he thought that as well.
I don't know, you and Paul McGann.
He does compete with him.
Is it the curly hair that does it?
I don't know, but I found him very attractive.
I used to have curly hair.
In fact,
I used to have a hairstyle dissimilar to Colin Baker's hair in this episode.
You used to have hair.
You need to post a picture.
Like I used to see a picture.
Deb's standing in the background sneering at the moment. that hairstyle I had before I met her. Anyway, the Doctor is suffering from sort of post-regenerative weirdness and keeps on going into these sort of fits of madness.
It was funny, though.
I don't mean they start singing One Step Beyond. I mean, you know, physical madness. What did you say?
No, you know when he's looking in the mirror at himself and he says, noble brow, and then he shows the mirror to Perry as though he's showing himself in the mirror to her. I thought that was fun.
Yeah. There's a lot of good humour in this.
Well, that's Doctor-ish. That's for me why he immediately became the Doctor for me watching this episode because he was so good. Moving on. Of course, we have the obligatory scene in one of the many TARDIS wardrobe rooms.
Yeah.
Each time the Doctor regenerates, the wardrobe room is either bigger, smaller, or completely different. He finds a rather revolting-looking coat. Then Edgeworth arrives to abduct the twins.
Along with all of the find old doctor's outfits and try them on, or at least acknowledge them.
Obligatory.
Yeah.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, so Edgeworth arrives to sort of steal the children, which is
kidnapped.
Yeah, it's a bit suspect. You would have thought they would have called out. Some bloke just randomly appears in their room.
Yeah, I know.
So standing up, they're quite old.
Well, for some reason, they thought it was magic.
Magic.
And I think that they may even have thought that they did it, the way that they can make things, you know, create things from their mathematic equations. Mm.
But anyway, he sticks some green polos on their wrists, and they suddenly become a bit entranced.
Yeah.
What gets me with that is that as soon as they say, "I am Romulus, I am Remus," and they both sort of chime the words together, and then after that they're fine. They just don't remember parts of their life. So initially they're just a bit entranced, but that sort of didn't sort of carry forward in the story.
That was fine. I didn't have problems with that.
No, did I? But well, I mean, you do have a problem with your audio, but you didn't have a problem with the not being
good grief.
Anyway, right. I forgot about that shot of the spaceship. That's quite a good spaceship. That now the alien sort of half bird, half man creatures. I think that's a pretty no. I think it's be quiet. It's quite a good idea for an alien. Robert.
Yeah, I like their costume.
Didn't work out. I don't think.
I don't know what the horns.
Oh, I did. Believed them.
Yeah, it works better than the other thing we're going to see in a few minutes.
Yeah, much better.
I thought they were quite a good creation. Obviously, we don't see them again.
I agree.
But then we don't see the tetraps again either. Morris Denham, who really sort of puts his heart and soul into his performance, and I think
he's the best thing about this.
What I do like about what he's done with this performance is when Mestor communicates with him psychically, he always looks completely exhausted after the communication.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really good. The Doctor and Perry
are
like an old married couple.
Are you having traffic? Someone has traffic going?
Oh, they like to drive ridiculously fast along a very short road with...
Okay, how's my audio now?
Hit and miss.
Yeah.
Hmm. Anyway, so
I understand.
You've just made me gloss over the fact the Doctor tried to throttle Perry. Which is...
I wouldn't be doing that with Perry. I'd be doing something else, for goodness sake.
No, you would be, Robert, yes. There's a rubbish cube on the table after the twins have gone.
That's rubbish.
A rather large rubbish cube. And this is the first time we get to see Hugo Lang. That's Mary's granddad, is it, Mary?
We have to be, yeah.
Or is it great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson, maybe? I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, that was future.
He's Gibbs from Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, he is. Well done. But I thought reminded me a little bit of a futuristic version of UNIT, the little headquarters they had.
Well, did you notice the silly stars they're all wearing? I mean, they're gigantic.
Yes.
Silver stars. There was almost a cartoon-like quality to those stars. I thought, oh, this is silly.
And they're all wearing sort of medical uniforms or something. Yeah, clearly it's the end of the season.
Exactly,
the budget's run out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, Matthew. So the Doctor's sort of come out of his little trance and can't believe he's tried to throttle Perry. But there's quite a good little scene played there where he tries to approach her and she sort of shines the mirror at him. And he said, "My word, you really are afraid, aren't you?"
Yeah. It's one of the few points in this where she does a very good bit of acting.
Hang on, are you dissing Nicola Bryant, friend of the show?
Yeah, Gabby, don't, please.
And I disagree. I think she acts very well throughout this.
I agree.
There's one point where she makes this one face that is so totally fake, it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm going to have to agree with
her. The
last
shot of the story is a bit annoying, but we'll gloss over that for the time being. And generally, she's quite pretty good. You've got to bear in mind that she gets gradually better as the time goes on in the show.
Yeah,
and I'm quite comfortable with her in this. I think she's great.
Mm-hmm. I do too.
But to add to the two stars of the show, Colin Baker is outstanding.
Yeah, I agree.
Totally agree.
And to consider he's just gone straight into this first story, and he's just got the part straight away.
And what he had to work with as well.
If you bear in mind that Captain Babel was, like Robert said a couple of weeks ago, it was Peter Davison's fourth recorded story. I suppose he's pretty good. I think the first one they recorded was Fall to Doomsday, so he's pretty good in that. But
yeah.
Colin Baker, straight into it. Fantastic.
The problem with this story is not Colin Baker at all. He's really he's top notch in this.
Right.
Might have to close down some windows there, Kirby. Then we see Mestor for the first time, and this is, for me, is the big cock-up of the story.
What were they thinking?
The actor inside the costume was really, really good. He did, do his best, and he tried his best to make his character
real. Edwin Richfield.
Who also played the captain in the Sea Devils.
Yes,
well, but his performance also hit a sour note for me because he shouted everything. And it would be nice if there was some modulation in what he was doing. But every time it was on him, he was always shouting from behind that mask.
Yeah, it's not very good.
Maybe he felt a bit constricted by it or something.
And he's got those eyes on stalks. So why does he need great big googly eyes on his face as well?
Dealey boppers, we call them. Dealey boppers.
So that's not very good. Of course, the spaceship that Hugo's in has crashed, and he's managed to survive that. It's all in flames, and he's just lying on the ground, which is quite a remarkable.
Only a little tear in the.
This Lieutenant Lang strikes me as a Rory figure throughout the. Lieutenant. F is in Lieutenant.
He was.
Nick called him Lieutenant.
Be quiet.
But he was like a Rory figure. He just kept getting killed and getting up again.
but he's he was certainly a potential companion, wasn't he? And I suppose where they did this story, they could have decided in the next one that he would could have continued with them. So obviously,
magic.
Barf,
the mail.
And by the way, where's the F in Lieutenant? Did you say?
Yeah, where is the F in Lieutenant?
Where's the F in Ruff?
He's there.
Well, there's no GH in Lieutenant.
No comment. All right, then. Basically, the episode ends with Hugo pointing his water pistol at the Doctor and he's just about to kill him. I like to say, the budget was a little bit low. They couldn't afford a big gun for him.
His water pistol has the USB drive connected to it. Yeah.
Can you come out from underwater? That's what Ben used to. Do you remember a long time ago in the 20 Megabyte podcast? Yeah. We used to have Ben used to broadcast from underwater.
I've shut everything down. Do you want me to completely reboot?
Oh, no, because we'll have to stop. But if you get too bad and you start going, might have to. We just have to. Listeners will just have to accept that Kirby is now broadcasting from his bath. The Doctor becomes a doctor and does a little operation with a little torch on Hugo and fixes him. And then the Doctor is that when he has another little fit and he starts talking poetry? And oh no, that's when he throttles Perry earlier on, wasn't it? Yeah, sorry, I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
It's when they're out of the TARDIS and marching along that he quotes poetry.
That's right, yeah. And he wanted his doctor to do that, apparently, do a lot of this poetry, which I thought had been quite good. They land on some planet and they see a boob sticking up from the surface of the planet. And they decide quite rightly that's their destination.
Nicola Bryant, was it?
No, it's in by homage to Nicola Bryant. The only thing I didn't like about the twins now, obviously in the old days I didn't like them at all, but the only thing watching this time I didn't like about the twins was when they chimed things together, when they said, instead of each of them individually saying, yes, I am, they said, yes, we do.
That's just twins, though.
Yeah, but they don't say,
Have you ever known any twins?
A couple of twins, but they don't generally say, if you ask them a question, they both agree. They wouldn't say, yes, we agree. They say, yes, I agree. Maybe both at the same time, but not using the word we.
Yeah, but I think it was used to demonstrate how unified mentally they were.
Yeah, okay. I didn't have problems with that.
I didn't either.
Okay, I can accept that. But I thought they were very very good, actually, in the story. I just remember being really irritated by them, and actually now I think they're quite charming.
The only part that didn't ring true for me was when I think it was Remus says to Romulus at one point, "I was never so scared in my life," you know, and he didn't show any of it. But, right. You know, outside of that, I thought they did a fine
role and all that. There's a brilliant scene where the Doctor and Perry are sort of in this sort of darkened corridor, and the birdie creatures turn up, and the Doctor goes all scaredy and tries to hide behind Perry in that. I think that's really funny. Sort of like, they turn the tables on each other. Perry became the Doctor, and the Doctor became Perry. Apparently, Colin Baker bit Nicola Bryant's bottom when that scene came to an end.
I just on purpose?
Notification came through. Was that from there? Have I got Facebook open? Hang on, I'm just checking.
Is my sound any better?
A little bit.
No.
Mary says no. We have to accept the word of Mary. Anyway, so there's a bit where Asmael or Edgeworth, what you want to call him, goes in to be revitalized, and we see all his innards. We don't see his two hearts, which would which would have been quite good on that occasion. But it's okay. I mean, I don't like the.
Yeah, I was confused as far as what was going on at that point, but I decided I wasn't going to watch any of this again. No. So I didn't bother to try to even turn on subtitles. So
okay. Well, what got me was that I didn't realize that that's what the Doctor had changed to be a transporter, didn't he? He changed that machine so he could use it as a transporter to get Perry out of there later on.
I had remembered that that was the transporter, and that's why I was confused.
Oh, but it was a revitalizer. The Doctor fiddled with it to get in.
That's one of the few segments from when I last tried to watch this, I remembered that they used the transporter.
Yeah. Anyway, the Doctor then meets up with Asmael while... what's the name of that... bloke who sets the bomb going. I can't remember his name now.
Roma?
I think it's
Roma. Something like that.
Yeah, something Mona or Roma or something like that.
Noma.
Anyway, there you go.
Yeah, he sets the bomb going.
Thank you, Romana.
2 points. May I have 2 points, please?
Perry, for some reason, has...
Hey, I started you off.
All right. Perry, for some reason, has hidden Hugo's power pack for his little water pistol. rather silly.
That's his USB drive.
He decides he wants to wear.
In the fanciest.
Yeah. What's the chances of picking the one jacket that would have that in there in the pocket?
As I understand it, the novelization completely ignores that whole bit.
I don't
mind.
Does
it ignore that whole bit, it basically, Eric Seward went in and just rewrote huge chunks of the story, and it works a whole lot better, but also because Seward went and wrote it as a pastiche of Douglas Adams. So
I will say though, I don't really mind the fact that does happen in life sometimes, doesn't it? You hide something and somebody finds it instantly because that's the next thing they want to do. So that does happen. I've got no problem with that whatsoever. Meanwhile, Perry,
it's Deus Ex Machina. It doesn't make any sense except as a way of forwarding the plot, and it's frankly rubbish for doing that.
Rubbish. Yeah. So Perry finds the bomb. That's a bit of a wobbly set there. When the Doctor tries to turn the revitalizer into a transporter, he thumps the machine and it wobbles. Oh,
never! That would never happen in a Doctor Who story.
I don't really notice it happening that often, to be honest with you. Basically, that's what happens. The freighter lifts off, leaving the Doctor and Perry to probably blow up, but. The Doctor gets Perry's watch to time his departure on, and it's stopped. Perry arrives in the TARDIS. Hugo points his water pistol at her, and she takes no notice of him, maybe because she thinks...
I love the way she takes no notice of him.
I know, yeah.
But the bad thing about that is her gurning when she thinks the Doctor's dead.
Matthew and I were talking about, I believe.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
I don't like that, but that's not her fault. Obviously, the director's told her to do that.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't. It's Nicola
Bryant. She's the one who was acting.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, she's the one who was acting. She could have maybe done something else.
But
I don't know.
The director could have said, no, don't do it like that, Nicola. It looks like you're gurning. Try it in a different way. Couldn't he? Yes, he could.
Presumably.
Yes, of course he could. He's the director.
He was reading the script and he went, oh, there's nothing I can do for this. So just do whatever you want.
It's not like the story had a rubbish director. I mean, it's Peter Moffat who did really good work on State of Decay and The Five Doctors, amongst other things. Yeah. And he's really stuck with this.
Garbage.
Yeah. Well, the only thing that was a bit silly was the fact that when the Doctor be quiet. When the Doctor arrives in the TARDIS console room in a slightly different time zone, he sort of corrects something, then appears stroking the cat he was stroking when he left. So the continuity is a bit,
The whole time zone things did not make sense at all.
Because if he's showing up 10 seconds later in the future, there's absolutely no reason why he needs to go back those 10 seconds. Not to mention, where's Perry and Hugo in the middle in the TARDIS console room if he's actually doing all that? It's a huge hole, and it's just there to fill in 30 seconds to a minute of screen time.
Yeah. It is, but it doesn't matter, really. It doesn't affect the story. It's just an extra little added scene which has no bearing on anything, really.
Actually, it probably did affect the story because if they paid more attention, this had the potential of being a good story.
Okay. Anyway, moving on.
I thought it was a good story.
So the Doctor hatches a plan. Meanwhile, Mestor kills one of
his... A tic-tac.
Yeah,
Mestor kills one of his thieving, subjects, I suppose you call him, with embolism, just because he can. The TARDIS materializes and the Doctor does some more of the old poetry. And then, that's right, because the freighter lands on Gioconda, and so they have to follow him there. I'm talking about, what's his name? Edgeworth. Yeah, so the Doctor does follow him there. And then we hear the story of, the Doctor tells the story of what happened to Gioconda with the little sort of cave drawings.
I
thought that was quite well done. And then Hugo...
Since he was only showing it by flashlight, I have a feeling that they did not do that set very well.
True. Hugo, apparently the fact that it's quite dark was
dark.
Yeah, that it's quite dark was it's quite innovative in Doctor Who. Doctor Who is generally quite well lit, apart from Caves of Androzani and this story. Anyway, Hugo meanwhile gets stuck in a slug trail. it's sort of like concrete slug trail. Then Edgeworth, explains Mestor's plan of bringing three planets into the same sort of track in the solar system in different time periods or something like that, which is going to do something that I can't remember what. And, of course, he needs the twins, mathematical genius, to bring this about, or Mestor does. The Doctor, meanwhile, arrives and tries to throttle Edgeworth in one of his... last of his little funny fits, and then of course Perry gets caught and is sort of going to be killed, and then we get the Doctor going Perry at the end of that episode, just to balance out the Perry going Doctor at the end of the previous episode. Which on the commentary is quite funny because they both sort of
bothered listening to the commentary. Understand.
Yeah, go on.
The commentary was good. Yeah, the commentary was good. Yeah. I couldn't bother.
No, the commentary was very good. I didn't. I only listened to it because somebody mentioned on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group that the commentary was very good. So I might watch. I watched the commentary.
Who was that?
With I can't remember. I watched the commentary with the the info text. So that was another way.
Yeah, it's about the only way the story's bearable.
Moving on.
Lordy, you guys are really piling
review,
on.
Matthew, do the review after the story.
I think neither Matthew nor Kirby need to give their opinion because they've been giving it all the way through.
Yeah. Because Hugo's having another nap, isn't he? That's right, because Mestor decides he's not going to kill Perry because she's quite nice looking. It's a bit weird, but there you go.
Yeah.
So, which is quite handy because I didn't really want Perry to perish at this particular point. I do love the scene when the Doctor sort of comes up to meet Mestor, and Mestor sort of punishes one of his sort of sidekicks, and the doctor says something on the lines of you're a bit short-tempered, something like that. I can't remember the exact words he used, but listen out for it because it's in the quiz. Oh dear, I let something go there, didn't I? So
doesn't matter. I'm going to lose the quiz because
here we go. Excuses.
There's a point in which the doctor tells the twins to delete all the calculations they've made and just keep the calculations in their heads. The bird creatures sort of find the TARDIS and Mestor opens it. So that's interesting, isn't it? It's difficult to get into. The Mestor's the first creature that can remote control open the TARDIS just by the force of his mind. So there we go.
Well, I thought the other Time Lord, Esmael, has been giving him Time Lord powers.
To a degree. Yes. They find some very giant Tic Tacs in a room, and the Doctor tries to open one of them up, but when he uses some laser thing, the heat starts making it glow a little bit, which makes him realise that the exploding Son of Gioconda will therefore activate these eggs and spread them through the universe, but therefore destroying Gioconda and the solar system in the process. But do you say it's a dumb plan?
Wouldn't that destroy Mestor as well in the process?
Yeah, but some.
Well, the idea is that by blowing it up and the seeds go everywhere, that he sort of just goes on forever. And frankly, the whole thing is a rubbish plan.
Well, can I just say,
there's a lot of creatures in nature who sacrifice themselves for propagation.
Yeah,
purposes.
For their own species, for their own family, they'll do it, even though they're evil. Yeah. They'll do it anyway. But
Black Widow spiders.
Poor old. I was going to say Edgeworth saves the day because he sort of fools Mestor into going to his body, so as the body can be
sucked in,
killed by the Doctor. Really. So the Doctor does actually do a bit of killing there. His acting's a bit weird here, but I can see what he's trying to do with that. And then of course, then he says he's on his last regeneration, and he says I must regenerate. The Doctor says no, you can't. And then he sort of slips away in quite a moving little scene, really.
Might be the best scene in the whole thing.
And then all the creatures are released from the mind of Mestor and become sort of fairly normal. And this is where, obviously, it's a very long sort of goodbye sequence, actually. The story's over, and we still have about 5 minutes of people sort of being dispatched to their various places, and Hugo with his sort of yellow digital watch. Taking over Gioconda, I think, which is a bit, I suppose, fair enough. It reminds me a little bit like Peter Purvis's departure, actually. He sort of ended up doing a similar sort of thing.
Found it interesting that one Gicondan, I forget his name, who kept begging the Doctor to take him with him.
Yeah.
I'd be begging him too, because look at what's left of Gioconda. Who would want to be there?
Yeah, well, but they'll have to rebuild it, wouldn't they? And then, of course, that rather cheesy scene of Perry's silly smile. There you go. Anyway, right. So now that's the twin dilemma. Now I'm going to go first with this one because I might have to go and make a cup of tea while you lot moan about it. I expected, because of the way you lot have been so negative about it, to not like it. But there are bits in it which are a bit silly and irritating, but so mildly so that it had no bearing on it. Because I might be slightly sort of taken over by Colin Baker's performance in this particular story, but I actually quite enjoyed the story. It's certainly better than other stories I've seen and we've reviewed recently. As I've seen, we've sort of glossed over, even New Doctor Who. This isn't bad at all. It's a bit of a sort of common old garden Doctor Who.
It's definitely better than The Curse of the Bad Plot.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, it's common old garden Doctor Who story. It's certainly not the worst. I'd say it's an average Doctor Who story. I quite enjoyed it, and I don't mind watching this over and over again. I didn't get bored by it, thinking, oh, God, oh, God. But honestly, I did feel like that going into it because of the way you lot have been so negative about it. But watching it... I think it's great fun. I can see the problems they had with budget, but I accept it. The story works fairly well from what he was trying to achieve with it. You don't expect every part of a science fiction Doctor Who, science fiction fantasy TV show set in the future on a different planet to make total sense, you know, as far as the science of things goes, because obviously what he was trying to do would not have worked physically, but you know, we've had that happen in Doctor in the past. You know, it's just Doctor Who. Yeah. But this,
let's tour a planet with the TARDIS.
Yeah, and obviously the some of the well, the main baddie alien was pretty rubbish, the way it looks. But you know, the actor himself managed to create a character there, which you know was needed for the story, and it was fair enough. He was a bit like a sort of comedy, sort of alien baddie, but. You know, it was okay. It's, again, not the worst Doctor Who main alien baddie we've ever had. So, the Twin Dilemma, all it suffers from for me is following up from Caves of Androzani, which is one of the best stories ever. And you go from Caves of Androzani to the Twin Dilemma, which is an average story, which makes then for enhances that gap between the standard of the story. So, if we never had Caves of Androzani and you'd gone from Planet of Fire to this, I don't think people would really look on this as being as bad as they think it is, because it really isn't. It's not bad at all. I think it's actually quite well written, certainly well acted, and I quite enjoy it. So, you lot completely disagree with me. I like the Twin Dilemma. Go on. Kirby, you can have a go first. Oh, sorry, Matthew.
What?
I'm trying to pick my jaw up off the floor.
Yeah, I mean,
Go on. I'll say Kirby first. You go first, Kirby. I will stick by that.
I did not see this until maybe 2008, 2009, which was also around the time that I saw Caves of Androzani. And this was such a disappointment. I mean, it did look... The idea, I agree, is good. It had the potential of being an excellent story, and it's just rubbish.
Well, I'm not going to say it's an excellent story. I said it's a good story.
No,
but
no,
it's not excellent.
I said it had the potential of being an excellent story. It really did. And Colin Baker is great in it, but the rest of it is just, oh my God, it's just horrible. Matthew, go ahead.
I mean, it's just, you know, they had problems with the script because as Anthony Stevens, who wrote this, had never written science fiction before, apparently, and delivered the scripts really late and blamed it on an exploding typewriter of all things.
Really? But, I missed that.
And Eric Saward apparently had to rewrite the complete back half of the story.
I need to use that the next time I need an excuse for why I'm going to lose the quiz.
Yes. Eric Seward had to completely rewrite the back half of the story. They made it, Jonathan Turner made the absolutely god-awful decision that they're going to introduce the new Doctor on a story tacked on to the end of a season. When the budgets run out, they're having to hurry to put a script together, and the results are there for you to see. I'm going to disagree with a lot of what you said, Adam. I'm rewatching this for as much as I could bear to rewatch this. I thought Colin Baker was fine for about the first 5-10 minutes of the first episode. But from there, it's everything I have.
10 minutes, maybe.
Maybe 10 minutes. It's everything I have against Colin Baker's Doctor that I absolutely cannot stand, and why he's my least favorite Doctor on TV. His performance is over the top. It's too broad. He's stuck with that god-awful outfit. Never has so much talent been spent going into something that is so lacking of. And it's like a harbinger of doom, a comet flying across the heavens as an omen of catastrophe for what's going to happen to the show the following year. And if I don't shut up now, it's going to turn into Attack of the Cybermen all over again, and we'll be here for the rest of the episode.
Thank you. Mary, what do you think?
Well, I'm glad you left me for last.
No, we have got Robert still.
But wait, we had Robert.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don't worry about me.
I'm sorry. Well, sorry, Robert.
The other two are probably going to say, this was the absolute best Doctor Who story ever.
No, I'm not going to say that. But I'm going to say that Matthew, is where I don't like to see reviews of things ahead of time, because with so much hate and vitriol thrown at this one, I, of course, watched it looking for things to like, and I found a lot to like about this story. Yeah, I know the budget was very bad, and it shows up in the costumes. Of course, the Doctor's was his for the, you know, the rest of his run. But I mean, look at Perry's outfit. That's just as bad or worse than his. And I almost think it was done on purpose.
She showed up in a different, with the same costume as far as the fabric and everything, and they changed it. They thought that she was in her street clothes.
Yeah, there's a story she tells on the commentary that she actually went into the studio for the first recording, and John Nathan Turner actually came over the thing and said, Nicola, you need to go change the costume. And they were like, she's in costume, and had the designer had to run off and completely redo the costume right before they started recording, because, and I believe I'm quoting John Nathan Turner from his own memoirs, you know, the companion can't show more less skin than the Doctor.
What?
Okay.
Less skin.
Carry on, Mary.
Doesn't make sense.
Anyway, I found her outfit to be absolutely abomination. Maybe the shiny pink leotard maybe competes with it as worst outfit on Perry. But
yes.
But this one was pretty bad. And the costumes throughout, you know, show a lack of budget or lack of thought. I'm not sure which. And the sets. I mean, it's just basic stuff that's been covered in shiny cloths or crumpled tinfoil. Yeah. You know, so the sets and the costumes were made
very
obvious.
Or the plastic was shipped in.
Yeah.
It showed that there was no budget. But I found the performances overall to be really good. And I took a lot of things that were happening throughout as being something like parodies. I saw a lot of humor in this script that I really enjoyed, including the Lieutenant Lang, like I said, who was always kind of dying and yet reviving. That became, a humor point. I read about how Colin Baker, it was his idea that the Doctor start out being totally unlikable enigmatic and all that. His idea was to be like a Mr. Darcy.
I thought that was JNT's idea.
No, well, what I read said it was his suggestion to JNT that's how he'd like to play it.
It was a combination of them.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a combination.
And then as the series would wear along, he would, you know, become more known and more likable. So I found that was very effective in this first episode, especially his closing line. You know, I mean, you don't know how to take that. So for me, that would be very intriguing to continue on from there. And again, on the costumes, you know, the slugs were just basically, you know, cloth wrapped humans, you know, because they were just walk around. They weren't even, you know, like moving like slugs or anything. So the sets, the costumes showed the lack of money, but I thought Colin Baker was great. I thought Nicola Bryant was great. Everybody, I thought, did it well, and a lot of things you point to as awful, I saw as humorous, so I really enjoyed this.
So what about the story, though?
I think the story was good. I liked the story. I was engaged. I watched all four episodes in a row, which I usually don't with Doctor
Who stories. Yeah, I
didn't feel
torturedly watching this one. I do recommend not watching most of these classic stories in one go because they're not designed that way, and that's why I'll tell
you. Yeah, there wasn't like a dead episode. You know how there's always an episode or two where it's just a big info dump and not much happening. This, to me, was engaging all the way through.
We watched the first two episodes almost a week ago and didn't watch the second two until 2 days ago because it was just so horrible to try to contemplate watching.
Okay, right.
Yeah. You already gave your opinion.
Yeah. Robert?
Mr. Negative. I'm pretty much in agreement with you, Adam and Mary. I quite enjoyed it. I loved the humor, you know, the subtle humor with it. I was actually interested to know, even though I'd watched it when the DVD came out again, I was interested to know where the story was going. I thought some of the model work was quite good, especially with that that main ship that we see landing and taking off. It's probably just a shame it came at the end of the season that, you know, I didn't have the money to spend on it, you know, budget-wise. But there's some nice performances. It was nice to see a bit more of Perry. And I mean, yeah,
there's a little less of Perry than we've seen in, at other times.
Well, compared to Planet of Fire, maybe. But, yeah, what else could I say? Yeah, I quite enjoyed it. It's not one that I sort of get out, but it's one that I could watch again. I was just ashamed there wasn't so many extras on the DVD. But one thing that did amuse me, there was an interview on Breakfast TV with Nicola and Colin, and the interviewee thought that, you know, asked this question of Nicola. So as a young girl growing up in America, you wanted to be in Doctor Who. And I thought, how pathetic that they carried on this charade.
Yeah.
Oh,
goodness. But, I quite enjoy it.
One of the two quarries that they used was the Tomb of the Cybermen, Attack of the Cybermen, Telos quarry.
Thank you for that, Kirby.
You would know that, wouldn't you? Yeah, and I thought that, yeah, that's one thing. With that quarry location, didn't sort of match up with what came on the TARDIS scanner screen, which I thought was a bit silly.
And the other quarry was Delton the Bannerman Earthshock quarry. For some reason, I don't know why they bothered going into two different quarries, but...
Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Tried to make it look different.
So, there we go. And this is probably the story that's sort of... created the biggest difference of opinion amongst the 20 megabyte team, and I'm glad of that. But I'm glad to say also that, as we all well know on this series of podcasts, that I'm right. I think it's time to move on to a bit of feedback. Hello, Alicia. Just saying hello.
Hi, Alicia.
She can't hear you.
Well, hang on. You can say hello.
Hi.
She's walked out.
Hello, Alicia.
She's walked out.
Hello, Alicia.
She's walked out the room.
Hello.
She's probably fearful you're going to drag her into the podcast.
Exterminate.
Getting ready for departure. Right, let's move on.
She's hung over this week.
Back. Is she hung over? No, hung over that often. She just doesn't. She can't drink anything without drinking too much when she does drink. You know what I mean? She can't sort of have it. Like when I go to bed, sometimes I'll have a small glass of sherry and then go to bed. Rather than Alicia, that would be
small
a
glass.
Bottle of sherry and then go to bed.
Glass.
She does not. We're talking about our differences in drinking habits. I was just saying that if I have a drink, I might have a drink at bedtime, just one drink, and then go to bed. If it were you, you'd have the whole bottle. I have a glass, you'd have the bottle. That sort of difference. Okay. Right, I'm just trying to get Facebook and such to load up, and it's being a bit on the slow side. So if it affects the call...
It doesn't want
out,
to even contemplate the twin dilemma.
Why is it not working... Oh, here we go. Right then, the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group. We had a message from somebody from a long time ago on the 20 Megabyte Podcast called Graham Sheridan.
Yeah.
I don't know if he actually listens to the show anymore, but nevertheless, there was a message, and I'm just trying to find it, because it sort of counts as feedback. What was it? Anybody see it? Because I know.
Yeah.
I look at my notifications.
Yeah.
If I can look back far enough, because I've got Robert liking so many things now, it's pushed everything down to the bottom.
Sorry.
It was during the selection where the randomizer somehow forgot that we already had decided what next show was.
Here we go.
Next recording. Should I say something so it gets...
Graham Sheridan says, okay, positive feedback. There are good points. It brings as much... Brings us much... Magic farted and the smell rather distracted me. I'm trying to breathe and speak, and of course, right. Anyway, okay. Positive feedback. There are good points. It brings us the much negativity. Oh, you carry on, Robert. I can't read.
Negatively accepted Sixth Doctor, who gives us much the blueprint for bad regenerations due to a heavy or traumatic event leading up to the regeneration. Sure, the effects are awful, but I think with the few pennies that they still had in the bank, not bad. Hugo isn't bad as hero, Pity he didn't do more. Had more, didn't more to do. That doesn't make sense, does it? Okay, Nestor, I should say, Mestor, should have been able to do more, but he was more a comment on the big slimy moneymakers of the 80s, where many of the were on the poverty line in the UK. Thank you, Mrs. Thatcher. Misusing the intelligence of others.
Graham didn't
always
say that,
remember.
By the way, that was Robert's. Always
remember, there is nothing worse than Paradise Towers. I disagree. Which is the screeching noise of fingernails on chalkboards from beginning to end. Yeah.
Thank you, Graham Sheridan, everyone. And I'm just a bit disappointed that Rhys Parton couldn't be bothered to appear on the show yet again.
Yes.
But further down the list.
I liked Paradise Towers better than this.
Okay, well, yes. I'll be able to assess that when I eventually get to Paradise Towers.
I like Paradise
Towers. Anyway, Cora what do I say about people who must have pronounceable names? She says, Twin Dilemma has one of the best commentaries ever. Oh, that's probably where I saw that on the commentary.
Yes,
that I would call Twin Dilemma good, but Colin Baker's performance is just so unique and off the wall. I can't keep my eyes off him when he is on the screen. Nestor's, that's Mestor, by the way. Mestor's eggs look like giant Tic Tacs.
That's where I got the Tic Tac bit.
Yeah.
From her.
So that's the sort of feedback from Facebook. And if you want to do sort of add messages to Facebook, it's on Facebook, 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast. It's sometimes a bit difficult to find if you want it to appear on the show. So I would recommend sending it to 20mb.feedback@gmail.com.
Sometimes if someone makes a recent comment on Facebook, it becomes difficult to find recent comments when... Yeah. Certain Roberts goes out and starts welcoming the last.
Yeah, welcoming
people.
The new.
Well, can I just make mention though that the feedback address is at the top of the podcast group anyway. So if you didn't get that straight away,
we also had an unrelated message from Alexander Gordon Johans. Anybody?
Johans.
No, JAHANS. Never mind. And he says, an explanation for why the TARDIS exploded and the universe ended. River was sent a subliminal signal by Kaverian to blow up the TARDIS and kill him or prevent him reaching Trenzalore. The problem, though, is that River is River because she was conceived in a universe fresh from rebooting. By blowing up the TARDIS, she was cutting her own timeline short, but because she's so entranced entrenched in time, the universe almost literally fell to pieces without her, and the Big Bang is all about tying her convoluted timeline back together and so restoring the universe. The Wedding of River Song shows that this happens again, only worse, because the Doctor and his companions were both influenced and altered by seeing River kill the Doctor, but this time the edges are frayed enough that the Doctor can cheat.
So clear as mud.
There are a few more comments after. Right. Yeah, a few more comments after that. But so I'm not going to try and troll through all that stuff, because we have some feedback that's been sent to the correct, or sorry, the more easily accessible feedback back address, as I've just said, 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And lo and behold, I can't access it at the moment, so give me a few seconds while I try. Because the page won't open. I do hope I don't have to type in the password. Oh, I don't. Good, right. Right. Jeff Waddle.
Yeah. Woo-hoo!
He says, this is the one Doctor Who story I have never seen and never will.
What?
Why can you do a review on it?
How can he have an opinion about it? You have to see it.
Here we go. I have seen bits of it, and that's enough for me. Colin Baker was shafted with this. Utter dross. Not quite as bad as Nightmare and Silver, but not far off. And this is during the period when I gave up on the show.
And I so like Nightmare and Silver better than
Absolutely
this.
Absolutely dreadful. But like I say, Jeff, you can't really judge it properly without watching the story.
Yeah, I've seen Nightmare in Silver 3 times. I've seen this 2.5. I think that says everything that needs to be said.
Absolutely. Well, what I'm going to say is it might be
a good
idea.
You keep saying it, Matthew.
Yeah, I've seen this one and about a quarter, and the one was the last couple of days.
And you keep saying it, Kirby.
Well, good evening, 20 Megabyters. It's Andy Nunny. It's 17 minutes past 7 on Sunday night. And I've had to watch The Twin Dilemma.
You didn't have to.
Bad enough. But have I watched The Twin Dilemma on the wagon?
On the wagon?
One story where I think, I could have murdered a drink.
That's what Dr. Phil does.
Adam Pearce.
What?
I hate you.
Thank you.
I hate you intensely. The three worst cliffhangers ever.
Oh, God.
The worst acting ever.
No, it was Colin Baker.
The most scenery-chewing doctor ever. I had to watch it.
Didn't have to watch it.
I had to drink. Be seeing you.
Okay, great.
12.
I think we found somebody more negative than me and Kirby.
No, because I think that Jeff was probably the most negative because he didn't even watch the story ever.
He just took everybody's word for it that it was awful.
Well, he'd seen clips of it, so he got smarter than the rest of us and didn't actually watch the whole thing.
That's what I'm saying. If Mary had gone along that line, she never would have watched the story.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have Ian Kirk.
Yay.
Captain.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. The Twin Dilemma. This is Colin Baker's first episode. He's acting really strangely. Tom Baker had started off reasonable enough and then become more and more eccentric. And Colin Baker was intending to go the other way, but then his career got cut short as Doctor Who. Again, we've got this theme of mathematics over is more powerful than reality. You know, these two genius twins can create loads of power just through mathematics. And also using there was a computer called the BBC computer, and they're using those on the screens again. It was sort of considered cutting edge in the 1980s.
Product placement.
We have a Time Lord who was at the end of his regenerations, and he's growing old and dying. Like Matt Smith dying in The Time of the Doctor.
I'm not dead!
I don't really have much to say about this episode, and I've got to dash out now, so bye for now.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Ian. Okay. What can I say? He didn't sound particularly enthusiastic.
He never does. He just always sounds very deadpan whenever he delivers his feedback.
More than your normal on this particular occasion. Anyway, Alan Butcher sends in this. Adam, first I must say that The Twin Dilemma is an excellent story with a bad reputation. I can hardly relate to my glee on its first broadcast, finally moving on from the beige Doctor to a more colourful and charismatic Doctor, albeit the point being over-egged in the costume department.
Yes.
I have never heard any credible arguments as to why it is supposed to be very bad. I understand some people are not working out that this disturbed Doctor was not going to stay that way. But
no, that had nothing to do with it.
But
Kirby, pipe down.
I remain surprised at how many still can't cope with it even today, or indeed if they ever kept paying attention through to the end. Its plot is a fairly standard megalomaniac affair, but the plan is by no means at the lower end of the credibility scale compared to others we have seen, like I said, actually.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It is perhaps described in too grandiose terms. Furthermore, having to leave time for the bold and interesting twist on the regeneration struggle of the Doctor, the main plot could hardly be a storyline. It has two of the best guest stars the show had seen in very appropriate roles. Maurice Denham was a fine and versatile actor with a distinguished career. He started out as Pertwee-esque voice man on radio, but went on to a film and TV career with more depth and length than Pertwee. Perfect casting.
That's what she said.
For an elderly Time Lord. A great and moving performance here, including his self-sacrifice, which Colin Baker was very proud to have played with him. Kevin McAnally was a very current star and good actor for the time, having started his career in I, Claudius as Castor and gone on to star in numerous series. Ideal casting for a rather non-standard heroic type. The backdrop is a low budget, but not unusually so. Colin and Nicola do a fine job, except perhaps the slightly challenging stutter at one point from Perry, and okay, the twins were rubbish except when they had their personalities rubbish taken away, as Asmael controls them. They did do vacant expressions well. Those are my thoughts, Alan. Thank you very much, Alan.
Did he watch the same thing?
Yes, he watched the same thing. He did, yes, Kirby.
Yes.
Kirby, you've registered very well how much you hate this.
No. I had no problem at all with Colin and with the Sixth Doctor. And I really didn't have any problems with the twins. That's not where the problems are.
I know.
Wait, no.
Yes, that's my old ones. Those don't work. My old ones.
Why are
you
ugly?
My old ones don't work either.
Well, tough.
Where's my headphones then?
Hang on, what's happened here? Have you just problem with cable?
Yeah.
You stupid girl.
What?
Right, sorry, Alicia's.
I'm going to have to wake my girls up pretty soon because they're giving me to work this morning and.
Right. No sign of Ben yet, but anyway, it's time actually to welcome new members to the 20 megabyte group. And if I can get my map to do what it's supposed to do, I can go back to...
No, we don't need to welcome them because Robert already has.
No, I meant officially on the show.
Right, can we
remember who the last one I welcomed on the last episode was? Somebody really should take up this job.
I can work out by who was added. Okay, would have been Steve Powell last Monday, I think.
Because
there was Chuck Saunders and Steve Powell last Monday were added.
Yes, but were they added when we recorded?
I don't know. It just says last Monday. It doesn't say when.
John Kelly was probably the last one that I mentioned on the show last week. So we're going to start with Chuck Saunders. Steve Powell.
Hello, Chuck. Hello,
Katie
Steve.
Katie Pedley.
Hello, Katie.
Andy Ford.
Hello, Andy.
Anna Versace.
Hello, Anna.
Angela Keys.
Hello, Angela.
Paul McWhorter.
Hello, Paul.
And Francesco Rallo.
Hello, Francesco.
Unlikely any of them actually listen to the show, but just in case they do decide to listen to this episode.
Yeah.
Hello.
We need one more.
One more. Yes, 299. But you know what's going to happen? We'll get one more and somebody will leave.
We need Ian Kirk to open up another account.
Why?
we need another dog to join.
No, we don't.
Yes.
Right, then where's Ben?
Apple and Star.
Oh, news. We could Apple do news. Let's have a look at the news. And then maybe Ben will turn up just in time for the quiz. Right, Doctor Who news. Arthur Darville joins Who Down
Who's
Under.
That?
Now, apparently it's a great big event in Australia. Think Reese is going to be able to attend. What did you say?
Who's Reese?
Oh, somebody used to be on the show. They've got Matt Smith, Karen Gillan, and Arthur Darville. Sydney, Perth, Adelaide, and Melbourne. And they're
Perth?
All in March.
Did I hear Perth being mentioned? Yeah.
Sydney on March the 1st, Perth on March the 2nd, Adelaide on March the 8th, and Melbourne on March the 9th.
What's this titled, Adam?
It's called Hub Productions event features guests live on stage taking out the phenomenon of talking about the phenomenon of Doctor Who. What's it called though? Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, they don't give it a name.
Oh, it's some event. Is it Who's Down Under?
I think that's what it's called because Reese and I were talking about it earlier in the week and it looks incredibly expensive. Probably because they got all three of them.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Oh, I'd love to go, though. If it's coming to Perth, I'd go.
Go to it.
March the 2nd.
Go to it, Robert. Anyway, I think we're just about to welcome onto the show Mr. Benjamin Shoveler.
No, you're not.
March the 2nd. Yes, I have to go. I'll have to go.
March the 2nd? What am I missing?
Oh, something in Australia. Not too
I'm really tired. Yeah.
What's the matter?
I'm just tired. Things don't seem to be working right this morning. My brain isn't working right.
Well, welcome to my world.
It was a real struggle having to go to town and buy a sausage roll and some bread.
At least you can eat sausage rolls. My lunch normally comprises a banana and a packet of Watsits. Anyway, right, so we're on news at the moment, Ben. Oh, by the way, before we move sort of more deeply into the news department, who's hissing?
Is that me?
I don't know.
Is it gone?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I can put up with a bit of hissing. That's not terrible. Yes, have you a call? Can you remember? Because I doubt you've actually watched Twin Dilemma in the last week. Have you?
You're right, I haven't.
Right, but you have watched it at some point in your life.
Oh, many years ago, but I can't remember Jack about it. So.
What can you remember of your... I can hear myself. Hello!
Hi.
Hello!
What can you remember?
I can remember... It starts with the music that goes... And then it goes... And then the things come up that say Doctor Who.
Well, basically what I was trying to allude to is that some people hating it and some people are loving it. How do you sort of sit on it? I mean... In regards to...
Well, I'm not that way inclined. I don't belong to anything to do with the weather. But it was all right. It
there you
the
go.
Best ever, but it was all right. It was watchable, wasn't it?
It was all right. Yeah. Anyway, right, we're on news now. Where did we go to last week? What was the day last week? Monday, wasn't it? So Sunday is probably... Ah, we are. Doctor Who tops iPlayer figures for 2013. The 50th anniversary episode of Doctor Who was the most accessed programme on BBC iPlayer for the whole of 2013. The Day of the Doctor topped the charts with 3.2 million people accessing the episode at one point. The episode had 0.3 million more requests than the second place programme, Episode 1 of Bad Education, the comedy series about the worst teacher ever to grace a British education system. So there you go. Which isn't really
I don't
surprising.
Agree with that. I think that was my... My drama teacher called Mr. Sampson from when I was at school because he was a dirty perv.
Okay. Doctor Who,
was the worst
world's
teacher.
In time to close. The Doctor Who inspired online multiplayer role playing game, World's in Time, is to cease operation on the 28th of February 2014.
I was about to start playing it on the 27th. That's ruined my February.
They've released the Moonbase animation clip, which I'm not going to play. They've also released...
That's pretty good, actually, Adam.
Yeah, I'm not going to play it now. It's animation. It's an audio presentation. Are you supposed to watch an... Oh, never mind.
No, it's the animation where they've of one of the scenes from Episode 3, because they've animated Episodes 1 and 3, which were missing. And the DVD's coming out in the UK today, and it will be coming out here in the US
on
February the 11th.
If you want to see that clip, go to www.doctorwhonews.net. Tales of Trenzalore is some sort of book. With some tales of Trenzalore. Basically, in the years the Doctor's on Trenzalore, which is apparently about 300, is it? Oh, no, I lost track. He has a few adventures there, and I think this is basically three or four stories in relation to that. Very sad news. I think you know what I'm going to say. That Trigger, Roger Lloyd Pack,
Rodney, Dave,
has passed away. He was in Doctor Who and
Harry Potter. I thought, though, they could do something about that, though. Couldn't he cybernise himself?
Can't do a lot about the fact he's
dead.
Oh,
yeah, he could cybernise himself. Well done, Robert.
Don't
Slightly
so
inappropriate, dumb. But never mind.
Slightly inappropriate. When has that stopped, Robert?
Exactly. And veteran BBC costume designer Ken True has also passed away.
Yeah, that's a shame, isn't it?
So those are the mixed news, really, on Doctor Who. There's been some pictures of Peter Capaldi in some sort of costume while filming.
It's purple!
No, not that one. There's another one of him riding a horse in a...
That's
in a,
Matt's
like a night
costume.
Dress. Yeah, never mind.
That was a purple coat he was wearing. He's got a purple...
Yeah, that's Matt's costume.
That's Matt's costume.
When he's on the horse.
No, when he was on the horse, he's wearing some sort of white nightshirt, but looks like him.
Yeah.
But he was still wearing a purple coat before Matt's one.
Yes, he was, yes. We have, officially now, an additional sponsor. And that is... Ooh. Mary...
Mary's sponsoring
it.
Wow. She's trying to work it out.
Thank you very much, Mary. Welcome along to this world of sponsorship. It's lovely to have you here. Thanks very much.
You want the new sponsor? That's
a new sponsor, yeah. Go on.
The new sponsor is that Lavarzi.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that worked well, didn't it, Adam?
No, I thought it might work quite well.
It doesn't pay to surprise me.
Well, it does, actually, because it produces a thing called comedy. If you go to www.lavarzi.co.uk, there is a banner at the top of their page where you can buy lots of absolutely wonderful Doctor Who products. Most importantly, two versions of the Fourth Doctor's scarf. I'd love to have that Season 18 one.
You're not plugging for anything free there, Adam, are you?
No, I've already tried that. It doesn't work.
You're not fishing for a free scarf.
I did get a cheap scarf, or cheaper.
I've already got one!
The Seventh Doctor's jumper, the Seventh Doctor's silk paisley scarf, and that retails at £36.99.
Matthew needs that jumper.
The jumper itself is £44.99.
I've got two of them already.
The scarves are £49.99 each, and there's a Dalek scarf also available at £36.99. But if you want to go there, they have lots of other products that aren't Doctor Who related, apps, which are absolutely wonderful. We have another sponsor, don't we, Mary?
Is it Mary?
Yes, we do.
The funny thing about the other sponsor, which is...
It's Mary.
One.co.uk.
Is the fact that when I asked them about them... I'm trying to get them involved with Lavarzi so they maybe can sell some Lavarzi products in their store. He thought I was asking them for sponsorship money, which he'd already paid, so I ended up with a double whammy. Thanks, Who Won? twice. So they're basically signed up now to next October, so we're doing all
right. That's fantastic. When do we get our cut of this sponsorship money?
You don't, because it's all absorbed into the into Podbean's fee.
I'm a radio
fee.
Professional, sir.
It's all absorbed into Podbean's fee. It's a shame, though. I would like Who Won if they could do some sort of link for my book, which is the Ultimate Doctor Who Quiz Book. That'd be quite good, wouldn't it? But they won't because they can't download stuff from it. Although they could do, couldn't they? Hmm. Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver.
This is what happens when you do e-books only and not physical books.
I don't do e-books only. It's my publishers that do e-books only. But they're still
Adam, have you never lucrative. Heard of a printer and a ream of A4 paper?
Tenth Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, price £10.99.
You could just print it out and then take it down there to him and say, there you go. Have some coffee.
Fourth Doctor Sonic Screwdriver, which I do have in the box underneath my microphone. These are coming soon products. These are coming soon. I know what I'm reading. Latest products on Who Won are the DWM469 with the picture of Peter Capaldi and Time of the Doctor DVD. I want the Blu-ray. So there you go. That's a sponsorship section. Not yet. But I've got it in HD off iTunes anyway, so. There we go. And now I think it's time for this week's edition of... Oh, my God. You won't get this one.
I bet I will.
All right, then. I have prepared some questions. Yes, Mary?
Where's Herbie's excuses?
I have no excuses.
I have a
horrible.
This is going to be a very interesting episode.
Why?
Probably more interesting than the questions. And we have got a theme tune. If you listen to the blimmin' podcast.
Oi. Adam, you know I always listen to the podcast without fail every single week.
Yeah.
Hang on, I've got connection problems. I'm buzzing. Oh, you're buzzing, actually. That's better. Right, so, question one. Oh, God, we just knocked it again.
What, the question's on?
The twin dilemma, initially.
That's what I thought, yeah.
All right, and I've got to phone the Saints ticket line as well, if you could remind me of that. So. Right.
Phone the Saints
Adam,
ticket line.
Yeah. Adam, yes, don't forget the Saints ticket line.
Not yet, but later on.
Okay.
Newcastle United tickets I've got to try and buy. Right.
Oh, someone mentioned sports.
Southampton are rubbish. They're even below Man United in the league.
Yeah, that's pretty bad, isn't
what?
It?
What?
Yeah, I know, man.
Hang on, I'm just waiting for my iPad to load up the questions.
All right, so are we.
And it's done so. Right, the first question goes to...
Other tablets are available.
Thank you. The first question goes to Matthew.
Yes.
Which of the twins wore the green costume? You've got one chance of getting this right.
I know.
Yeah, and I know too.
Go on, Matthew.
I don't care.
Correct.
Yes.
Kirby.
Master.
Who wrote The Twin Dilemma?
Someone who can't write.
No, that's not the answer.
I know.
I know.
I know as well.
I know.
Go ahead.
No, hang on. It was Matthew said, I know first.
But I knew first. Is this because of the time delay?
No. Go on, Matthew.
Anthony Stevens.
Correct. Ben, your question.
No, wrong.
What?
It's Anthony Stevens.
It's correct.
Singular.
Ben.
Yes. He's right. There's no S.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Points to Ben. Thank you very much.
Ben, this is your question.
Great. Can I have that last one again?
No. What were the Doctor's first words of the episode?
You were expecting someone else.
Nope. Anybody else? Anybody else?
Did I swear? Sorry.
Hello? Edit. Anybody? Nobody? Last chance. All right. The answer was, well, Perry, what do you think? Right. Mary.
Well, Perry, what do you think?
I am giving this absolutely no effort whatsoever.
Mary.
Thank you, Kirby. You can tell. That's your excuse. Okay.
Mary.
Yes.
What is the first costume the Doctor takes off the clothes rail?
Is it the fur coat?
It is.
Ah!
Robert.
Yes, sir.
Where was the Doctor's original destination before he changed his mind and decided to go to Titan 3?
Nexus 5, something like that?
No, Mary?
No, it's a Nexus 7. I have two of them.
Vester 95.
Correct, right. Matthew. There you go.
Yes.
What was the name of Commander Fabian's communication officer? Did you get that?
No idea whatsoever.
Did you get the question?
I got the question. I just don't know.
Right. Does anybody know?
I didn't get the question. What was the question?
I didn't hear the question.
The question was, what was the name of Commander Fabian's communication officer?
Commander Fabian's communication officer?
Right.
Oh, that's that woman, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously, yes.
Is that Elena?
It is!
Elena! Yeah, well played by Dion Inman.
Kirby.
Master.
What does the Doctor say when Perry says, what's a little radiation sickness among friends?
Hello.
Nope. Whose question is this? Was it your question? Kirby?
Yes, you said it was my question.
Oh, sorry, you lost me. Okay, so no, that's wrong. Anybody?
Yeah, I know.
Go on then.
What was the question?
Go on, Ben.
Do the question again.
Oh, for God's sake. What does the Doctor say when Perry says, what's a little radiation sickness among friends?
Says it's the only thing that's little about you, my darling.
No.
I know.
Go on,
Mary. Very nice.
Is this where he says Braveheart Tegan?
It is where he says Braveheart Tegan.
Oh, yeah.
Ben.
Mmm.
What rank? Will you stop hiccuping? What rank is Hugo Lang?
Hugo I know. Lang.
Yes.
He's a Commander General in Chief.
No, he isn't.
No.
Who should I know first?
Me.
I did.
Go on then, Colonel.
No.
Lieutenant. And don't forget the F.
Right.
Lieutenant.
Right, Mary.
Yeah.
I thought you said you weren't going to try, Kirby.
That's one that I...
Oh, dear. Only when he chooses to.
Mary.
Yeah?
What does Edgeworth step into when he feels fatigued?
The script.
I know it's a little chamber thing, but I don't know what it's called. I don't know what it's called.
Anybody?
I know.
Robert, what did you say?
Revitalization
Correct.
Chamber?
Right. Okay. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What animal does the Doctor call Asmael, or Asmael, when he recognizes him? You old...
Dog?
Correct.
Oh, come on. Should we have a... Seriously.
We'll hand it to him any better.
Yeah. You old woof woof. Woof.
Let's make it easier.
Right, so the current scores are in last place with 1 point each is Kirby and Ben. In third place with 2 points, Matthew. And joint leader, Mary and Robert with 4 points each.
Right,
next question goes to Matthew. Who provided the voice for Jocondan control over the radio?
I know.
Go on then.
I
know. No, yeah, Matthew first.
I've got no idea anyways.
Colin Baker.
Correct. Kirby.
Master.
Where precisely did the freighter land?
Earth.
Nope. Anybody?
I know.
Go on then, Mary.
Is it Jocondan?
Nope. That's not precise. Was it?
A lot of five.
The answer was.
Success. At all the places in the
Omega intersection.
Oh, Omega.
Right.
Yeah.
Omega. I believe that was Matthew's question initially, so we'll move on to Kirby.
No.
Oh, that was Mary's question.
I just had one.
But so that was Mary's question.
No, that wasn't my question. That wasn't mine.
So it wasn't my question.
So it was Ben's question then.
That wasn't my question.
That was Kirby's question. That was the last one. So therefore, this is Ben's question.
Right.
We got there in the end, didn't we? In the story of Jocondan, as told by the Doctor, who offended the sun god?
Ah, right. Now, that would have been someone who was obviously not particularly handy in the way that I'm trying to read something at the same time as the whole script. I'd say it was the Eric.
No, right. Anybody?
Well, hey, we can all let's cheer the sun god. Ra, 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 ra.
The answer, please. Who was it?
Oh, God.
Hello?
It was Fallopian.
Does anybody know?
No idea.
Right, the answer is...
No idea.
It was a queen, but I don't remember
yes,
her name.
Yes, that'll do. Thank you, Mary.
Queen Beatrice.
The Queen of Jocondan, yes.
That's what I meant.
No. Mary.
Was her name. Beatrice was her proper name, so therefore I get a point.
Mary.
Did I believe me? Check the script. I've got it in front of me.
Mary.
Yeah.
What is the name of the guard that Asmael wants removed?
I know.
The guard?
The guard.
Guard.
Oh, I don't remember. Pass it on.
Anybody? Robert, you know.
Noima.
He's correct. Robert.
Yes, sir.
What is the last exclamation of episode 3? Or basically the last word of episode 3?
Doctor, is it?
No. Anybody?
I know.
Go on in, Robert. Matthew, sorry.
Harry.
Correct. So, after that round of questioning, in last place, Kirby and Ben with a point. In third place, with 3 points, is Matthew. And in joint lead, Mary and Robert with 6 points each. So, this is Matthew.
High five, Mary.
This is Matthew's question. What did the Doctor say to Mestor when the monster punished one of his minions?
No idea.
Anybody? Oh dear. Well, the answer is, good heavens, you are rather short. Good heavens, you are rather short tempered. Oh, never mind. Right, so this is Kirby's question.
Master.
How does Mestor plan to bring the other planets into orbit with Jocondan? What does he intend to use?
I know.
Gravity.
Nope. Go on then, Robert.
Tractor beam.
Correct. Ben.
Aha. Uh-huh.
What is Hugo's job title?
Oh, I know.
Bad actor.
He's not.
I know. That
was a bad actor.
Hugo?
Yeah, Hugo, yeah. His job title.
Hugo Lang, would that
That's
be?
That's the one, yes.
Hugo Lang as played by Kevin McNally.
That's the one,
saying,
yes.
He keeps saying, I'm not dead yet.
He's the... the executioner.
No. Right, anybody?
I know,
go on,
I know.
Mary.
Interplanetary pursuit officer.
Correct. Mary, your question.
Oh, I was close. I got the... Nowhere near.
Mary. What was Mestor using Drac as that ended up killing him?
Is this here?
Yeah, another clue?
No, I don't know. Pass it on.
Right, does anybody know what Mestor was using Drac as that ended up killing him?
A doorstop.
Nope.
No idea.
The answer is a monitor. Right, Robert.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, because he's right. Viewing the whole thing.
Robert.
And so it sucked out its brain, yeah. Yes, okay.
Robert.
Yes, sir.
What does the doctor say when Mestor calls him an interfering fool?
What does the doctor say?
Yes.
He calls him an interfering fool.
Yes.
Well, you got the question.
Yes, sir, I am.
No, anybody?
Would you like a jelly baby?
Nobody knows. The answer is no, just a terrible shot. Right.
Ah, that's right.
Two questions left. So this is a free-for-all until we move on to the Trivial Pursuit questions. Where does the Doctor intend taking the twins at the end of the story?
I know.
Go on then, Robert.
Earth.
Correct. Who composed the incidental music for The Twin Dilemma?
I know.
Go on, Robert.
I know.
Robert.
It's Malcolm Clark.
Is correct. Now we move on to the Trivial Pursuit questions. And the person in the lead gets the sort of first choice of categories. I do hope I've got my category list here. Oh dear.
Categories.
I know Deb knocked these all over the floor, unfortunately. So I think she might have mucked the cards up. Hang on.
She cut them up with her juices.
There she.
Wouldn't it be funny if I picked out the same card as last week?
Did she break them?
Is she what? Pregnant? No.
No, did she break them when she threw them against the wall?
She didn't. She just knocked them off the table and they went all over the floor.
She threw them against the wall.
She accidentally knocked them off the table while beating seven bales of crap out of Adam.
If you're referring to the broken computer incident, she didn't actually throw the computer against the wall. She threw something against the computer.
I've done your computer. I'm going to do your cards now. If you don't stop putting water around this house.
Saboteur.
Yeah. If you don't pick up the Hoover, your greatest cards are that. It's
right, hang on. I'm just writing these categories down so as I can cross them out. Right, so who's in the lead? Robert.
Uh-oh, yes.
Your options are Time Lords, Companions, Episodes and Stories, Years and Dates.
Episodes and Stories.
I'll go on in. Episodes and Stories. The Episodes and Stories question is, in the Sontaran stratagem, what was Fountain 6, Luke Ratican's invention, that made him a millionaire aged just 12?
Was that the central locking thing or whatever it is?
It wasn't. Does anybody know?
That was a search engine.
It was.
Point it was a search Kirby. Engine.
Right. So therefore, in second place, Mary, your choice out of Time Lords.
I'll take Companions.
Oh, Companions, right. Companion question is this. What year is it when River Song is posing as Cleopatra and the Doctor is mistaken for Caesar?
Right.
I have no idea.
Does anybody, I know.
Go on in, Matthew.
102 AD.
Wow, that is the correct answer.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, Matthew and I have no problems answering questions for good Doctor Who.
Okay, so the next question goes to Matthew. And that you've
got, what are my categories?
You've got Time Lords, Years and Dates, Monsters, or Cast, Crew and Beyond.
Years and Dates, please.
Years and Dates. Who played the Doctor between 1963 and 1966?
I know.
Is this a serious question?
Years and Dates?
Yes.
Would you like a clue?
This is a Time Lord question.
William Hartnell.
Correct.
Jeez.
Well, are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah, really sure. Did you have to think about that one?
Well done. Right.
Well, it's like, Mary, you remember in Chicago when they were doing like the random question thing, and they would be like, how many episodes were in the 10-episode story, The War Games? It's like, is this a serious question?
Kirby. Is it possible Peter Cushing also Never played mind. During that period?
Kirby.
Master.
Right, your categories are Time Lords, Monsters, or Cast
Crew. Time Lords.
Time Lords, right. This is a Time Lord question. What is the weak spot on the back of a Sontaran's neck that the...
Probic Vince.
Oh, jeez.
Especially after he did the Time Warrior last year.
How is that a Time Lord question? Monster question.
No, because it's in The Invasion of Time, which was set in Gallifrey. Right. Ben,
I don't care. It wasn't Time Lord. It was about a monster.
About Time Lords.
Yeah, Ben, you're
that should be in a monster category.
Ben, you've got a choice between Monsters or Cast, Crew and Beyond.
I'll have cast, crew, and beyond, please.
Where in the UK did Joan Redfern assume that Gallifrey was located?
Oh, I know.
Wales.
No. Matthew?
Ireland.
Correct. Right, so now it's a...
Do you know I knew that?
My choice of questions now. Back to the normal order. Matthew?
Yes.
Right. Which
don't be so enthused.
This is I'm not going to tell you what category it is. It's half the fun of it. Which doctor's outfit featured a long scarf? Oh, my God.
Oh, oh my God.
I can't help it. It's just what's the order they come out.
What was Kate Nine's name?
Once again, is this a serious question?
Challenge what it says on it. All right. You don't want me to ask you that one, then. I can ask you a different one. All right?
Which doctor's costume was loosely based on cricketing, and it was right. The fifth
okay,
doctor.
Well, I've got a better card out now. Matthew, forget that stupid question. Matthew.
And his initials were PD.
Never mind, Mary. Matthew.
Full name, Peter Davis.
Be quiet. Right, forget
any
that
ideas,
one.
Any ideas, anyone?
Matthew.
Yes.
What magazine was the 11th Doctor reading whilst waiting for the Silence Envoy, Father Gideon Vandeleur?
Playboy.
I have no idea, actually.
Was it issue 14 of Nicholas Norks?
Does anybody know? Nobody knows. The answer is Knitting for Girls. Kirby, this
Master.
Is your question. Which Spitfire pilot joined the Doctor in the Battle of Demon's Run after helping him during the new Dalek paradigm attack on Earth?
I know.
Go on in, Kirby.
Danny Boy.
Correct. Ben.
Hello!
In Night Terrors, what was the name of Jim's bulldog?
Terry.
Seriously. What was the name of some bloke who you've never heard of before's dog in some episode that once aired once on telly?
It is a bit
not
miss,
whose name was Peter Davison. Can I have that one? Which Fifth Doctor's companion's name was Tegan? Can I have that?
They are very hit and miss, these questions, because on another card, the same category of question was, what was the name of the very first episode of Doctor Who that was broadcast? Well, you're not having that one.
Yeah, wow.
Right. So what have I got? What you've name got, was a dog?
What was the name of the dog, in the Jim's dog in Bulldog in Night Terrors?
Frankenstein.
Terry.
No. Anybody?
Terry the dog?
No, the answer is Bernard.
Bernard!
Mary!
Quatermass?
Mary.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
was the stage name of the actress who died in 1962 but met the Doctor at Christmas time 1952 at Frank Sinatra's house?
Good I know. I know.
Well, Mary.
I know.
Shut up, Robert.
I know. It's easy.
Well, give it to Robert.
No, Robert.
It's Marilyn Monroe, isn't it?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about a fictional...
Well, that's
character in a story. Yeah,
Doctor Who is fictional.
Marilyn Monroe wasn't fictional.
No, but Doctor Who is. It says the stage name of the actress who died in 1962 but met the Doctor at Christmas time 1952 at Frank Sinatra's house.
Yeah, that she was in a story.
Robert,
and
this is your
I'm thinking somebody real.
Robert.
Yes.
What London landmark was the home of Wotan and the War Machines?
It's the Post Office Tower.
Is correct. So, that's the final... Well, the end of it. The final scores are in last place with one point.
This is close to Man United v Chelsea.
Is Ben in second to last place with 6 points? Is Kirby in joint second place with 7 points each? It's Matthew and Mary, but the winner this week with 15 points is Robert.
I'd like to hand over my quizzing crown from last week.
It's a long reach.
it's a hell of a long reach, isn't it? But, you know, I'd like to pass it over to you with good grace, and I'm not at all bitter about getting the most ridiculous questions that have ever been asked on the quiz.
But there is a burning question, not relating to the quiz, but where the bloody hell is Reese?
You know, I don't care.
You know, Adam, can I tell you something?
Yes, Robert.
With his own life.
You know what Reese did last week? He did a podcast about the TV show Arrow. He did a podcast about it.
and he didn't do our podcast.
I know, I've heard this.
So what's going on?
I heard
his interests are changing.
Reese hasn't got a clue which number the doctor is, so let's not get it back.
Yeah, but I've also heard he's been doing a podcast about Terry Pratchett with Graham Sheridan. Is this true?
Yes, yes.
I think he needs to get his priorities sorted out.
I think he has.
Yeah.
And I would not have heard about the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast if it weren't for Reese.
Yes. He still needs to get his priorities sorted out, though.
Well, right. You know, he's never been a fan of the classic Who, and he's never been a fan of the quiz, so I think...
He can't count.
That's a double whammy.
Yeah, I'm not impressed.
Now, yeah, but he should broaden his horizons.
I agree. But next week we'll be talking about the horror of Fang Rock. Now, it was a little bit of confusion about our schedule of stories, but only because my file with the schedule on only went up to this week. But Kirby very kindly found something that goes a bit further into the future. Next week, horror of Fang Rock. What about the week after that then, Kirby?
I'd have to look it up.
It's invasion.
Yeah, the invasion.
That's
invasion.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I have a question about Revelation of the Daleks.
I'd like to see that. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
I know I've seen that, but I don't know where because I cannot find it anywhere.
Shocking, isn't it, Robert?
Anywhere.
Yeah, very shocking. I'm shocked.
Yeah, it's not online anywhere. Netflix doesn't have it, so I don't know how it is I've seen it.
Well, and Netflix may have had it at one point, and it's just become unavailable since then because I've had that experience with a lot of discs and stuff.
And I only have it as a dub from VHS. Emotion. So
if we do Revelation, it's a good likelihood I won't be able to see it.
Well, I've got the original copy.
Mary, did you just hear me?
1960 in my cupboard, but no one else is going to watch it.
It's on Daily Motion.
No, it's not. I just looked.
Well, I've just got a thing saying here it is.
Oh, you found it on Daily Motion?
Send her the link.
Yeah, send me the link because I looked at it. I spelled it every way I could think of, and it wouldn't come up.
Yeah, the Daily Motion search engine is rubbish in trying to find anything on
rubbish.
There.
Right then. Anyway,
I feel like it's an end joke.
I would say I'm slightly disappointed that I was really looking forward to this part of the story. There was going to be a bit of a scrap between Ben and Matthew, but it all seemed quite calm and collected. So.
Do you want us to have a fight about?
Yeah, what do you want them to scrap about?
I was about to say.
Matthew, did you not watch The Time Warrior?
I did, but I didn't realize that was going to become a running gag all of a sudden.
Did you get that, Mary?
What? Get what, Mary? Oh, right. Yeah, so,
yes, I did get it.
So, Ben,
I did get it.
Have you heard... okay, good. Because you're quite in tune to the world of media. Have you heard anything in relation to Doctor Who this week that could be worth listening to?
Talk to me?
Yes! Is there anyone staying on the show?
As I'm quite connected, is there anything I want to talk about Doctor Who related to media this week?
No, because you're in tune with the media. You're sort of... You read and stuff. So I just wonder...
Read! Yeah, yes, I read. You read. I have one up over all of you. I read.
No, you pay attention. So I'm not... See, at my house, I'm not allowed to have news or anything on because...
I read books.
All Isabella has on is...
sometimes pamphlets.
All Isabella has on is a Disney channel.
What are you aiming towards? What am I meant to be saying?
I just wondered if you'd heard anything in relation to Doctor Who on your sort of magazines, online, the news, gossip, anything really.
It's over 50 years old.
Oh, shut up.
I've heard that there's a new series being filmed.
Is that it? Well, I've heard that as well.
I'll tell you one thing. There's a new Doctor.
Thank you. So basically that means that, really, we're not getting a lot of news coming through from the BBC.
Master?
Yes,
I'll tell you one other thing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one other Doctor Who-related interesting fact. Yeah. That if you want to call it interesting, then you can. If you don't,
Robert
then fair
won
enough.
The quiz.
For one of my Christmas presents, I received a Doctor Who T-shirt, Gallifrey-type thingy, which is a really nice T-shirt. Only problem is, my best mate, bought it for me, and he bought it in a small size, whereas I am, extra large. If I was extra large, I'd be quite pleased. extra large T-shirt size at the moment, thanks to all the pies and pasties. And but the good news is it doesn't fit me, but it does fit my 7-year-old daughter very nicely. So there you go.
Is she prepared to wear it?
Read about that.
No. She wouldn't wear it.
Yes, Kirby.
not, it's not news, but could you give us some multiple choice selections for the next several?
I'll try.
And keep in mind that I sent you a list of things not available on Netflix.
That's very nice of you. I'll try my best.
Does it have to be available on Netflix?
Well, it helps.
Yeah, I suspect it probably does.
So, yeah, for the quiz. For the quiz.
Well, I think actually in just being able to actually watch something to review, because a lot of the selections Adam was making, like Ice Warriors and stuff, aren't available yet on Netflix anyways, but are also the more expensive DVD releases to the tune of about $35 each.
Okay.
No, but Ice Warriors is on Daily Motion.
Thank you, Mary. I love it when Mary stands up for me.
But I was helping Mary by insisting on Netflix.
That was very nice, except I can't depend on Netflix for all of my choices.
And I apologize for my thing with the two DVDs a month. Apparently that was an option at one time, and you're just stuck. You're stuck with it.
Not really, but I like it. I've chosen to be stuck with it.
And also I'm slightly disappointed this week there's not been anywhere near enough innuendo, Mary. So what's going on there?
I don't know.
No, nor do I.
She said.
You have been now for your humor. You don't need me.
Anyway, right. Yeah. That's about it, really. Next week, like I say, Horror Fang Rock. When are we recording then?
Good. Sunday, I hope.
Could we do it Sunday?
We can do it Sunday. Then me and Ben will have to record on our own on Monday.
We will. Mm. We'll have to do our own little thing. Yeah.
That way Ben can't win.
Well, no, actually, because what you can do your quiz on the Sunday when you record, and Adam can hold my questions over. So he can ask the questions like as if I was there, and then he can ask me them again on Monday, and then I can answer them. He can have the scores what everyone else got, and so then we can add my scores into the quiz, and then I can win.
So he can make it so you can win.
And Adam, if you'd like to email me my questions beforehand, that would be brilliant.
Like a proper interview, huh?
Yeah, exactly, Mary. That's exactly what it is. You know, I mean, you wouldn't have some sort of superstar on which not tell them what you're going to ask them first.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they might be uncomfortable. They might not want to answer questions about Doctor Who's third assistant who had yellow legs.
Adam,
or who was some obscure character's dog?
Yeah, exactly. Called
Adam.
Bernard.
Set those questions open. Anyway, yes, Robert.
You want to know how much those tickets are for that Doctor Who event?
Not as much as the Monty Python tickets I had to shell out for.
Listen to this. The gold package is $950.
How?
What?
The silver package is $650.
Ouch.
There's A, B, and C reserve tickets, $150, $125, $100 respectively.
Let's get a bit more
$100
tickets.
How many days is that for?
You realise these $900 tickets he's talking of are equivalent of about
£3.60
in proper money.
It is not.
Is it made out of plastic or paper? End of story.
Hey, you guys are getting polymer notes as well.
Actually, on a theme like that.
Is it start up with £5 notes or something?
Yes, they are going to start bringing them in from 2015. Yeah. A much better idea. The notes will last a lot longer. It's a very good idea, Australia.
They don't.
Your only good idea since the Ashes, but, you know, still a good idea.
We've been doing good in the Ashes, haven't we?
Yeah, shut up.
Well, let's just say England came second.
And the women are doing much better.
Which was incredible, because at one point we were third.
Anyway, right, so thanks everybody. I'll be back again next week, I presume. I'm still trying to edit the Paul Wilson thing, so that'll be coming along as soon as I can get it done. I'm quite a busy man, you see. So next week, hopefully Reese will be on. If he's not, I don't know what to say.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
We will have a fight, though, because he is insisting that the doctor's the wrong number.
Oh, that's all.
I know.
But that's all sorted out now. But never mind.
Well, no, he's not sorted out, because he still thinks he's the 13th or 12th, and he's clearly the 14th, because if he was the 12th or 13th, he wouldn't have had to have a new set of regenerations. Case proved, I win by Reese.
Reese just likes to argue about anything. Series and seasons, numbers of the Doctor, name it.
Yeah, but do you know why he doesn't appear on the show? Because when I said that whatever happens, I'm right, he couldn't live with himself. Just because
you think he's killed himself.
Right.
That's a bit harsh, isn't it?
No, never mind. And
so he's going to be on podcasts with people that agree with him.
Yes.
Maybe that's it. Maybe it's the Reese podcast.
Yeah, you don't,
right
ever hear Reese getting aggravated in any of the other podcasts he does, because he's always agreeing and in total agreement with his co-hosts. But on this one, mm-hmm. we have fun winding him up.
I don't have fun winding him up. I just wind him up. I'd do it even if I didn't get fun out of it. You know?
Being right is miserable sometimes, isn't it, yeah. Ben?
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks everybody. See you next week. Goodbye.
Bye everybody.
Bye.
Bye bye. Bye bye.
So long. Thanks for all the fish.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is the trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.